This is Digital Story Podcast number 688, May 21st, 2019. Today's theme is 5 Things We Can Learn from Warhol's Photography. I'm Derek Story. Last week, I spent an afternoon with Andy Warhol at San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. As I looked at his paintings and photographs, I was intrigued at how his work could help my own photography. After studying my images from the day and thinking about his, I came up with these 5 tips to infuse more creativity into our work. I hope you enjoy the show. Whether you're a fan of Andy Warhol or not, it doesn't really make any difference in terms of what I'm going to talk about for the next few minutes, because it's really about the process. He could apply these techniques and these ideas and come out with one thing, and you could apply similar techniques and different ideas and come out with something else. So the real thing here is the process and not the finished product. Now, that being said, I have to tell you, I really enjoyed the show, the exhibit at San Francisco MoMA. I like Andy Warhol, and the more that I see his work in person, the more I like what he did. So anyway, I came away with some wonderful ideas that I thought you might be interested in. Let's talk about some of the takeaways from the show that we can apply to our work. Alrighty, here's the first one. And this is actually an Andy Warhol saying. Art is what you can get away with. Art is what you can get away with. I love this because basically what he's talking about applies beautifully to photography, and especially photography in the digital age, where we can experiment, we can try all sorts of different things, and it really doesn't cost us anything. Digital images, you know, they're electronic files that go on some sort of media, and we can try 1,000 of them, we can try 10 of them, we can do something completely weird, and it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't cost us any more to do that. He would have loved, I think, to tell you the truth, having the tools that we have today. A lot of times he would start out with a Polaroid. He also loved point-and-shoot cameras. And in fact, he carried a point-and-shoot camera with him later on. He carried a point-and-shoot with him basically all the time and photographed basically everything that was around him. He loved the idea of a visual diary. So he would photograph stuff that, you know, a lot of us would never even consider taking pictures of. But the idea is for him then was that he wanted all this content to come in into the hopper and then see what he could do with it. Now, when he's shooting with a point and shoot with film, you know, that actually cost him a fair amount of money to shoot those trash cans and to shoot, you know, those people, you know, leaning against the wall and all that. In our case, it doesn't. It really doesn't. So therefore, do not be afraid to push the envelope. You have these digital tools that allow you to just experiment like mad. You don't have to show anyone else this stuff, especially the stuff that doesn't work out, which is going to be most of it. You don't have to show anyone. Just show them the stuff that you end up liking that you may not have ever had in the first place had you not tried to get away with something crazy. All right, so art is what you can get away with. Now, the only caveat that I want to put on this, do not interpret this as hanging off the edge of a building to get some sort of shot. I'm not talking about danger. I'm not talking about putting yourself at risk. What I'm talking about is pushing the creative envelope, not putting yourself in danger. The second idea, the photograph doesn't need to be the end product. Oh my gosh, this is such an Andy Warhol thing. Some of my favorite Warhol paintings started out as Polaroid prints, but then ended up as mixed media images. And they were so interesting. Now, he would do all sorts of things. He would take a picture, especially for his portraits, and he would use anything. He would use a photo booth, or he would use a Polaroid shot or anything. And then he would project it sometimes. He would project it, and then he would take it from there. And then he would use pencils and paint and, you know, all these different things, screens, you know, with dots, you know, like we would use for making halftones. all these beautiful different illustrative tools to create the final product. And I was thinking, that's very interesting. That's fascinating to me because we so often think that the photograph is the final product. You know, we've taken a shot, we've put it in our image editing software, we've kind of played with it a little bit to make it look really fine, and then we're done with it. And a lot of times we don't even print it. You know, we're just like done with it on the computer and that's it. And then we move on to the next thing. What if that was just halfway through the process? What if you went ahead and printed it out and then continued to work with it? What if you incorporated it into some other thing? So what if the image, the picture that we take that where we often stop, we didn't stop there? And we use that as a springboard to go on to something else. This is a really cool idea, I think, that the photograph doesn't need to be the end product. It can just be somewhere in the middle of the creative process. Item number 3, repetition can be interesting. So when you first, let's say at the gallery, when you first walk up to a wall that has a bunch of Campbell's soup cans there, you know, a whole bunch of them, at first you may think that this is just a repeat of the same image over and over again. And then as you get closer, you begin to see differences in them. They were illustrated just slightly different. They were different flavors of soup. Little bits and bobs were slightly different. So at first you're pulled in by the repetition because in a sense, repetition is attractive. The problem with it can be that it doesn't hold you very long. You go, oh, okay, I get it, right? And then you're on to the next thing. But what if you're attracted by the repetition, pulled in, and then you start to see the slight differences, and then suddenly you're standing there, you know, staring at this thing for 5 minutes and you never thought you would do that. This is a great tool for us to work with, and there's so many visual opportunities for us to play with repetition, have a slight variation in that repetition, or just have, you know, one thing askew. So, you know, studying Warhol's work and how he handled repetition, I think, can be very helpful for our own photography. One of my favorite pieces in the whole show was Ethel's skull 36 times. And this was, she actually commissioned him to do a portrait. And she thought, this is early on in his portrait phase, she thought that he was, you know, going to take her to the studio and set up a camera and do all that kind of stuff. Instead, I believe the way the story goes, he took her to a photo booth and just had her just go crazy in this photo booth, just doing all these different poses. She did get into it. And then he took all of that content, he blew them up. He did mixed media, you know, different colors. So the different frames, one would be yellow, one would be red, all that kind of stuff. And then when you stand back and you look at the finished product, here she is, just, you can just see all these different, you know, energetic things, and you can see her getting into it. And then you can see his treatment of it. And you're looking at this and you're going, wow, in one sense, this is repetition because they're all kind of cropped and framed the same way. But in another sense, this is very energetic and vibrant because of all the variations in each frame. So I think that this idea that repetition can be interesting, there's a lot for us to play with here. And if you get this on your radar as you're, you know, out exploring the world, you may find some opportunities that you would have walked past before, and see what you can do with them. The fourth one. Be bold with color. I love this. Be bold with color. Oh my gosh, is he bold with color. I mean, a lot of people say that, you know, Andy's work is, you know, pop culture, pop art, all that kind of stuff. And that very well may be true. And it's not that I'm disputing it. But I think if you stop there, you're just selling it short, because I think his use of color and being bold with color, I thought was very expressive, sometimes innovative, often very appealing to my eye anyway. And I was thinking, okay, in photography, you know, again, this is something that I feel like that many of us, myself included, don't do enough of. We're trying to get the color accurate, or we're trying to correct color, we're trying to do all these things that now, even as I say them, they sound so boring. Instead of going the other way with color, which is, hey, this scene has some very interesting stuff going on. What if I exaggerated this color? What if I added a color? What if I put a tint on this? What if I did this, that, or the other thing instead of, just kind of trying to always have the color accurate? For instance, when you have solid backgrounds, you know, there is an opportunity to infuse color there and play with it. Oh, well, there's just opportunities everywhere once you start thinking about it. You know, I'm saying here, instead of always just trying to correct color and have the right color in your images, sometimes play with color, be bold with color, and see what happens. You still have the original shot, you know, and especially if you're shooting raw files, you still have the original shot. You can always go back and correct it and make it look, you know, realistic if you want. Duplicate it, play with it, be bold with color. Then the next day, see which one you like better. And the fifth one, take an Instagram approach to your portraits. One of the things that really jumped out at me, and I looked at a lot of portraits the other day by Andy Warhol, is that they were very immediate. They were just very accessible. They were right there. And part of the appeal was the way that they were cropped. Most of them were cropped as squares or just slightly off square. So they were mainly shoulders up. So they were head and shoulders portraits. And a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times the face was, you know, angled directly at the camera or slightly off axis from the camera. So as you're looking at these things, you just, boom, feel like you're right there. And one of the things that I've learned with Instagram over the years is that the images that just really jump out of that square frame are the ones that often have the most appeal for viewers. In other words, you know, they don't have to search through all the little elements in the frame. There's just a couple, you know, major items here going on. They can digest it quickly. They're usually scrolling through the images quickly. They can digest it and then appreciate it and then, of course, move on. And I think that that works even beyond Instagram. I think that can work in other areas and even prints. And as I was looking at these big prints that, you know, crop tightly and squarish frames that were hanging on the wall, I just could just take them in so easily. And at the same time, I really felt like I could pick up the vibe of the subject. You know, I didn't really have to search through it. The fact that there was repetition of this, I think that contributed to it. And of course, this was his style. So I'm not saying that, you know, suddenly I'm going to start cropping all my images this way or making all my portraits this way. But I like the idea of having them accessible and with a certain sense of urgency to them. I thought that was pretty cool. That's something that I had reserved mainly for my Instagram work. But now, you know, who knows? I may broaden that scope to other areas as well. So those were my five takeaways from my visit to San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, hanging out with Andy Warhol. Art is what you can get away with. The photograph doesn't need to be the end product. Repetition can be interesting. Be bold with color and take an Instagram approach to your portraits. I tell you, I'm looking at some of those shots where I've played with some of these things. Oh, it may be a phase, who knows? But right now, I'm having a blast with them. All about image quality, size, and resolution for publishing your gallery online. So this is a piece that I got off the Portfolio Box blog that I thought was really interesting. You know, when I was the moderator for the Skylum Facebook public photography group, one of the questions I got all the time, what's the best way to prepare my images for display online? And, you know, so they always wanted to know things like, you know, the dimensions, what's the best dimensions, because there's some compression that's going to happen. And, you know, does DPI make a difference? Dots per inch, does that make a difference? You know, stuff like that. So that was something that I answered a lot. And then I started thinking about, well, the Portfolio Box site you know, what's the best way to prepare my images for that? So I found this article that I like. And by the way, this information, most of this information will be helpful regardless if you're publishing to a portfolio box site or not. I hope at some point you do, because I think you'd be really happy. But let me give you some of their tips. This is from them telling you how to best prepare your images for a portfolio box gallery or basically any other gallery. All right, first of all, DPI, dots per inch, only matters when it comes to printing or scanning. And a lot of people cannot get their head around this. DPI value has no effect on the quality of the image viewed on a screen or uploaded online for this sort of thing. Now, if you're printing, yes, it makes a big difference. But for displaying online, don't worry about it. I just have some standard setting on export, I don't know, 300 PPI or something like that. It's not something that you really have to worry about, okay? At least according to these folks, and that has been my experience as well. Now, before uploading your images online, whether it's a portfolio box or anywhere else, make sure that the color profile is sRGB. So for instance, if you're using Photoshop, go to File, save for web, that will make them sRGB. In all the other apps, when you do export, you should have an opportunity to choose sRGB, Adobe RGB, maybe Profoto, and a couple other ones. Anything electronic, probably, you know, any electronic display, you probably want sRGB. However, on the other hand, if you're going to do some printing, you probably want Adobe RGB. Okay, so sRGB for publishing online. For Portfolio Box specifically, your images should be 1920 on the longest side. And here's what they say. All images that are larger than 1920 pixels in width or height before upload will be resized to 1920 pixels during upload. To avoid quality loss, we recommend that you upload images that are 1920 pixels or smaller. Note that images that are smaller than 1920 pixels will not be resized. So for Portfolio Box, that is the magic number, 1920. For Facebook, I recommend, and I do this for Twitter also, 2048 seems to be the magic number there, which is very close to 1920. They're both in that ballpark, but right around there. Anything bigger than that, usually, you know, is just going to get sampled down anyway. Anything smaller than that might not have, you know, the same depth of quality. So Portfolio Box, 1920. Facebook, 2048. That's my recommendation there. Now, speaking of Portfolio Box, you can present your best self online with a Portfolio Box site. This is far and away, in my opinion, the classiest way to show off your work. So to create your own Portfolio Box site, all you have to do is click on the tile that's on every page of the digital story. That'll take you over to our landing page. Or you can use the link in the show notes to get started. You can set up a free account, have a free page, play with it, learn all the tools, just go ahead and use it and stop right there if you want. However, if you decide to go pro, right, and get all the additional benefits and storage space and all that sort of stuff, not to mention your own custom domain that's included in this, if you start at the Digital Story landing page, you will get 20% off the $83 annual price for a Portfolio Box Pro site, including custom domain and all the other goodies. Portfolio Box, sponsor of this podcast, creators of a great area for photographers to show off their best work the best way possible online. 2019 buying guide for best instant cameras. I thought, since I did a bit on Andy Warhol in this podcast, I thought also you might enjoy this article on DP Review that just came out, their buying guide for best instant cameras. I have a link in the show notes to the entire article, but I'm going to read you a little bit here and also share with you their pick, their favorite instant camera. And again, We're tipping our lens cap to Andy Warhol here, but hey, instant cameras are very popular right now with non-Warhol artists as well. All right, so here's what they have to say. What is it we love so much about instant cameras? Is it the nostalgia factor? Or the sensation of being able to hold and share a physical print? Maybe it's the excitement that comes from watching an image slowly appear before our eyes. Surely for some, the lo-fi image quality is refreshing in an increasingly high-resolution digital world. And I thought that was a nice little introduction there. Now, their favorite, and they go on and talk a bit more about things, but their favorite is the Fujifilm Instax Mini 70. It strikes a perfect balance of price to features to make it our top overall pick, plus it makes use of the most affordable instant format. Available in 6 colors, the Mini 70 is among the most compact and lightweight instant cameras on the market, and also among the prettiest, in our opinion. The CR2 batteries it uses can be a little annoying to find, but battery life is overall great. And unlike rechargeable instants, the Mini 70 should have some juice even if it's left on the shelf for several months. I guarantee it probably will for sure. But most importantly, it's really easy to use. Users simply select their shooting mode, normal, macro, selfie, landscape, self-timer, or high key, and the camera does the rest. And unlike some of its competitors, focus is motor-driven, 3 positions, and set by the camera when your mode is selected. Exposure is fully automatic, though there is a +2 EV option. Overall, the Mini 70 does a good job of balancing flash with ambient light thanks to its variable shutter. So that's their pick, the Fujifilm Instax Mini 70. That is their favorite one, but they do talk about other cameras there as well. And again, if you're interested in instant photography, and a lot of folks are these days, you might want to take a look at this article. The link to it is in the show notes, and a big thanks to DP Review for publishing this buying guide. I just want to mention that I have 4 new fine art papers coming from Red River Paper that I'm going to be testing over the next couple weeks, and I will share those results with you. I'm very excited about these surfaces. These are archival, museum-quality paper stocks. In other words, they will last way beyond the gallery show that you do with them. I'm going to do some testing, not so much for their archival quality, that I believe Red River Paper on, but for their individual qualities, you know, and, you know, how does certain images look on one paper compared to the other. So I'll have that information to share with you pretty soon. But I have to tell you, I have a project that I'm going to be working on that I'll talk about when I talk about these papers. I'll talk about a bit more. I'm really looking forward to getting this delivery tomorrow. I'll probably start working with it midweek, and I'll keep you posted. You know, Red River Paper, you can get just about anything that you need there, from, you know, this stuff that I'm talking about, which is stuff that you can hang in a museum, stuff that you can have on your wall for decades, all the way to fine art greeting cards, all the way to beautiful paper for 5x7s and 4x6s. The whole gamut is available there. If you want to learn more about all their interesting paper stocks and what they have to offer, just click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story, or go to their Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Also want to mention that I think we're down to 1 seat left for our Humboldt Redwoods workshop. That is coming up on September 18th through the 20th. I do believe that if you go over to thenimblephotographer.com, that it isn't sold out yet, but that there's 1 seat open, so that if you wanted to get on the reserve list and get the reservation information and take a look at it, that you can do that. But we're getting very close to filling that up. As soon as that seat goes, that means we will have sold out the entire workshop season, which just thrills me to have so many people coming out and spending time together, hanging out with me and enjoying photography as a group. Again, if you want to learn more about that workshop, you can go to our workshops page that is on thedigitalstory.com or go to thenimblephotographer.com and click on workshops there and check it out. Like I said, I think we have one seat left for the Humble Redwoods Workshop coming up September 18th through the 20th this year. A big thanks to all of our Inner Circle members for their support, their wisdom, their feedback, and their thoughts. I just love having this group to hang out with online. If you're interested in becoming a supporter of this podcast and the Nimble Photographer podcast, by the way, we're going to have a new Nimble Photographer interview coming out next week, and I think you'll like it. This time we have an illustrator. That we'll be interviewing and learning from. Anyway, I digress there for a moment. All of this is supported in part by our Patreon members. A big thanks to them. You can learn more about becoming a member of the Inner Circle by clicking on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over to the site, take a look at it. I hope at some point you become a supporter of this podcast, that podcast, and all the work that we're doing together. It really makes a difference. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I really enjoyed the Andy Warhol Show. I hope you enjoyed the resulting podcast. I'm working on more interesting things for next week. Have a great week. Come back and see me next Tuesday. Until then, bye-bye now.